This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Good morning, buddy. Happy Friday. And a happy International Tuba Day. Yeah, that's right. It's International Tuba Day. Did you know that, George? You know it's International Tuba Day? Do you have any idea?
I didn't. No. I probably should have, actually.
Did you play the tuba?
Not the tuba, but I played something close enough.
Well, what's weird is that I, of course, celebrate International Tuba Day because I played the tuba once upon a time. One of my sons played the tuba. I actually own two tubas.
Those are not cheap.
Yeah, one was like a banged up tuba that my dad bought at a flea market sort of thing once. So, and then one was a tuba I got in high school that was my basic tuba. But anyway, so yeah, I can't really play the tuba any longer, but I still celebrate International Tuba Day. And I was thinking about that as I was walking in. And I was, and what did I overhear? I walk in, I turn right, and I hear Brad saying to you, my band director, blah, 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 blah. It's as if band was on the topic. And then he said he played alto sax.
Yeah.
So band was the...
Somehow the topic of the day.
Happened to be the topic of the day. So you played trombone?
Trombone player,
yeah.
Right here.
Yeah, yep. Right. You're a trombone player.
Yep.
Now, here's the thing, though. I don't think it takes character to be a trombone player in the way that it does to be a tuba player. In other words, like you and Brad... You played sax and trombone. If you were going to ask a fourth grade boy or sixth grade boy, whenever you start playing, how old are you when you started playing?
It must have been...
Sixth grade?
Yeah,
sixth grade.
Mm-hmm.
They want to play drums, sax, or trombone. Those, like, that. You guys, like,
I migrated towards the cool... Oh, I wanted to play drums so bad.
Drums is the number one.
Oh,
so why didn't you play drums?
Bad rhythm. Couldn't do it.
You tried to play drums?
Oh, yeah. At my high school, or I guess at that point, middle school, because it was all trending towards... My high school is very competitive for marching band.
What was it? DeSoto High?
DeSoto Central.
DeSoto Central?
Yeah.
And you had a tryout for drums? You had to a tryout in sixth grade?
So in fifth or sixth grade to go into middle school band... It wasn't a tryout as much as it was, we're going to give you all the different little instruments, all the different mouthpieces or whatever, try them out, and then the band directors are there, hanging out with everyone, and it was...
And they will point you, or they will...
Point you in a direction of, you would be probably pretty good at
pretty
this.
Pretty good at this, right.
Yes.
I do think that flattery, in the end, so, sax is a terrible instrument, because, it's not a terrible instrument. I apologize to Kirk Whalum. It's a great instrument. But every kid wants to play sax if they're not playing trombone or drum. And you really don't need many sax players.
True.
So they don't, band directors don't want you playing sax because they don't need 20 saxophones. Whereas they can deal with 20 clarinets, but no one wants to play. Boys don't want to play clarinet, right? That's not what they want to play. So, trombones is a little more whatever. You can handle a good number of trombones. But flattery is, I think, the way they do it. I started out playing the trumpet just a little bit, not for long, like a month or something. And then Mr. Vera said to me, and we started in fourth grade, I think. And he said to me, you know what? I bet you'd be really good at the tuba. And he did the same thing. He put me in. This was a sousaphone that you would sit in. It sat on a, you know, and he said, and I just blew into it and I'm sure I made some hideous noise. And he goes, "You're a natural." And that day he delivered a tuba to my home. But he also knew that I was the eighth of nine Calkins kids, and the other seven, the preceding seven, had all played instruments and kept playing all through high school. So if he could sucker some poor kid into playing the tuba,
he had a tuba player.
There was a tuba in the system, the whole thing. Now, in the end, it's a good instrument to play because there's not that many. It's a little easier to make all state band and stuff like that if you're a tuba player than if you're a trumpet player. If you're a trumpet player, you got to be unbelievable. You're a tuba player, you can just, you know, keep the rhythm a little bit and whatever, and you can.
They'll be happy with it.
It's not the kind of thing, like, right now, it would sort of be nicer to play piano or guitar or something. You know, I don't sit home playing beautiful tuba solos to myself. That's just not, you know, like something I can't impress the women. Oh, not that I would at this point. Claire's impressed, honestly, when I play the tuba. But it's not a very useful instrument when you're 63, unless I do sometimes think maybe I should start playing again and be in some kind of a little, you know, be in some kind of a brass ensemble, like whatever, for fun. But right now I'm a disaster at it. So could you play the trombone right now if you handed your trombone?
I could. Sure. I don't play as often as I'd like.
Oh, but you do practice occasionally still.
Occasionally down at, so I played all the way through college. Like I was also in the marching band at concert bands at Ole Miss.
Oh, look at you. You were good. You were good.
Not good.
If you were in the concert band, you were pretty good.
Oh, it was like the third or fourth.
I did the concert band in college for a year, and marching band, although we didn't march, they just shot off a gun and you run to your spot because we didn't want to rehearse marching. So I did that for 2 years.
I do it every now and again. I know annually down there they do essentially like a clinic like once a week for whoever wants to come out and play. And then we do a performance, like a 4th
really?
Of July performance.
Still?
Mm-hmm.
Still?
Yep.
Look at you. Well, we're big believers in the band here. We try to get the Mighty Sound. We got the Mighty Sound in the South here.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Before the first football game of the year, every year. And so we're big believers. So anyway, happy International Tuba Day to all who celebrate. I want to give a little shout out to, I've been to two restaurants the last two nights. One, because the Daily Memphian was doing a Pints with the Press event, where if you're a Daily Memphian subscriber and contributor, because we are a nonprofit, we were down at the Evergreen Grill mingling with the people and talked to David, who's the owner and creator down there and is a big, avid listener of the show. And I got to tell you, makes an unbelievable chicken sandwich. Just an unbelievable chicken sandwich. They had chicken sandwiches cut up in halves or quarters or something as an hors d'oeuvre. They also had the burger, was a very good burger, but the chicken sandwich, sensational. So if you want to head down to the Evergreen Grill and tell David I sent you and get the chicken sandwich. And then continuing my effort to try to support local restaurants, I went to Andrew Michael last night, and it's fantastic. And if you've ever been, I really think some of the signature dishes across the city, the sticky toffee pudding. Sticky toffee pudding, I think it's called. Sticky toffee, dessert at Andrew Michael is just insanely good. And the AM breakfast is kind of fun. And so the other stuff was great too. I got the flounder, whatever. But shout out to the sticky toffee pudding and to the chicken sandwich. And by the way, big weekend in, sometimes we get so down in the dumps about Memphis and the future of things and what's happening and whatnot. And yet you look up right now and there's just a million things happening this weekend. You've got the Riverbeat Music Festival is tonight, starts today. Missy Elliott, Ludacris among the artists today down there. Tomorrow we got the Killers. You a big fan of the Killers?
It's a good band.
Good band.
Good band.
So that's tomorrow and others. You can see the full schedule over wherever. Just Google it or look at the Daily Memphian. But we got the Riverbeat Music Fest going on. There's some big puppy fest, big fan of dogs, tomorrow at Crosstown. Alton Brown, is at the Orpheum tonight. You know the food dude?
Yeah.
The food guy? Yeah. Alton Brown is at the Orpheum tonight, and on and on and on. You can check out the to-do list at the Daily Memphian. A whole lot of stuff is going on in the city this weekend. Great weekend to be a Memphian. Okay. Today on the radio show, we got Jason Smith coming up next. We got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. But I wanted to begin with a little hoops. So last night, Jalen Brunson hit the winner. Sensational, right? Absolutely sensational.
The crossover, like crossover into the crossover was disgusting.
But also against a really superb defender, and it might as well have been me guarding him. As far as he ended up creating 12 feet of distance. Like it was crazy.
I of all people on that Pistons team, arguably the last person I would have expected to be put on skates like that would have been Asar Thompson.
It was unbelievable. It was like, you wonder how, you never want to see that highlight again if you're Thompson. Like, oh no. My God, how did I end up over here? And so Jalen Brunson drills the three-pointer, and the Knicks beat Detroit. Detroit then turnover on the next possession. That is that. And it was a really interesting game, fun game, back and forth. Detroit went on a 20-2 run at one point to take the lead, and then the Knicks battle back. They get the Bridges a tip to tie it with 33 seconds to go, mm-hmm. and then Brunson with the winner. And so, but and now they go on to play Boston, and they were swept by Boston during the regular season, and one game was close. So let's just go ahead and presume they're going to lose to Boston. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that, if you're a Knicks fan, like, it's not perfect. It's not what you want. You don't want to have to just beat the Pistons and then lose to Boston. But is that, like, is that enough? Is it okay? And I partly ask this because it applies to me. The Grizzlies are sort of in a much more uncertain situation. There's more moving parts and uncertainties, which I'm going to get to in a moment here. But even yesterday, Gabe was basically saying that LeBron should retire because he's not going to win another title. Gabe wants LeBron, and he's not predicting he's going to retire this year, but he wants him to retire because, hey, he's got nothing left to accomplish, and he's not going to win another title. And I'm of the view that, and maybe, like, of course you want to win a title. Ole Miss football would like to win a title.
Of course.
Right? My beloved Buffalo Bills would like to win a title. The Memphis Tiger basketball team would like to win a title. The goal is to win a title. But in the end, I've said this a million times, most of us don't. I have gone through my entire life. No team I've ever rooted for or deeply cared about has won a title. And I think that good is good enough. Entertaining and good is, or it's not, it's all you have a right to expect as a sports fan. And this idea that, like, what are you supposed to do with the Knicks? Blow it up? Trade Jalen Brunson? Let's just say they lose in five games to the Celtics. Was that not entertaining last night? Yes, it'll be frustrating to lose to the Celtics when you lose to the Celtics. But what is, take Ole Miss football.
Yep.
No, you're not as good as Georgia, or you're not as good as, you know, whatever. I mean, year in, year out, whatever, and you're not better than Ohio State this past year. You didn't even make the damn playoff, and that was disappointing because this was a year where you're supposed to make the playoff. But isn't being relevant in the SEC all you
beating
have?
Beating Georgia.
Yeah, beating Georgia. I said that's why I hesitated when I said beating Georgia. Isn't beating, like, that's a little bit like the Jalen Brunson moment. Isn't that? Well, maybe I don't have sufficiently high standards. Maybe I am settling, but I just don't think, as a sports fan, you have the right to expect championships. And if you're the Knicks, like, look, it's a little Knicks Ole Miss kind of similar. Like, Knicks were down in the dumps and irrelevant for forever.
Yep.
Much as Ole Miss muddled along for a long time. I think good is good. Am I wrong for saying that good is good enough?
Funny enough, I think it's actually a pretty apt comparison as well. Because look at the amount of resources that they've thrown into the project over the last, let's just say, 2 to 3 years. Between bringing in a good coach, Tom Thibodeau, Lane Kiffin, polarizing, but good coach, probably in a pretty good spot for that personality. Look at the roster. I mean, with a starting five like that, you fully expect the Knicks to be one of the better teams in not just the Eastern Conference, but the NBA.
Right.
But they've struggled against the good teams.
Right.
Look at what Ole Miss did last season. They put all this money, all these resources into the best defense they maybe have ever had, or at least most talented team they've ever had.
And didn't
and they
didn't
struggled
quite
against
deliver.
Some
I think the Knicks
teams.
Delivered more. The Knicks are delivering.
Yes.
More than and the other distinction I would draw is that Ole Miss has still, even though it's in the SEC, even though it has the resources that come with it, it is at a structural disadvantage just out of the gates as compared to Alabama and Georgia and whatever else. The Knicks aren't.
No, they're not.
The Knicks have more money than anyone else, whatever else. So for the it's actually more understandable than an Ole Miss fan would say good is good enough, relevant is good enough, than that a Knicks fan would say it. Because a Knicks, there's no excuse. But I don't – to me, it does then – I mean, we've seen this, and it applies to the Grizzlies. When you say, is the core good enough, as Chris asks the question, good enough for what? That's the and if you're if it is good enough, if the answer is it has to be good enough to win a title, no, not good enough. I think it's pretty clearly it's not a this is not a core that's good enough to win a title. The way Chris phrased it was good enough to be a competitive playoff team. Now, again, there's more issues in play with the Grizzlies, but and of course some of this is cyclical in that it depends on where you are, and we get bored. And so in the same way that good enough and relevant enough is very clearly good enough for Detroit this year, just making the playoffs, being engaged in a competitive series, I'm sure there's disappointment in Detroit because they didn't win, and they can look back at this series and see all the games that they could have won, and they'll be a little but that is very clearly, I have to imagine, in Detroit, good enough. When you are at the end of your cycle, when you've done this year after year after year, people get bored with good enough and they want more than good enough, right? They want that point, they want real playoff success. But I don't know. I'd be curious if the Knicks now, as I expect they will, lose to the Celtics, what should Knicks fans be saying? Should they be saying blow it up?
I don't think, but especially in the NBA right now with the new CBA, and we talk about this a lot with the Grizzlies as well, with the contracts that are coming up, it becomes increasingly difficult to either add to a core that's already established like this, where you have 4 out of your 5 starters all making pretty big-time money.
Yeah, there's not the flexibility to blow
there's
it up.
No,
you can sit here and you can say, Ja's not a good enough superstar to get you where you want to go, but that doesn't, you can't wave a wand and make him into a better superstar. Like, so then that brings me to the other thing I want to talk about, which is John Hollinger has now weighed in on the Grizzlies. John, of course, former executive with the Grizzlies and a very thoughtful NBA commentator. He has written his piece about the Grizzlies that went up over at The Athletic. And just basically, a lot of the stuff that he writes about is stuff that we've discussed here on the show, certainly stuff that Chris has discussed, and begins with the belly flop. I mean, it is kind of striking when you see it. And you wonder, like, occasionally people, why wasn't there more enthusiasm for the playoffs against? They were 14-23 over their last 37 games, including the playoffs. 14-23. And since February 2nd, against the top 12 teams in the league, they were 0-19.
Yep.
So that's why a situation where good enough, good isn't good enough, because the good seems so fraudulent that you're not even. Like, the Knicks are getting this win last night over Detroit, and Ole Miss has beaten Georgia, and whatever. Here, you were 0-19 against the best 12 teams in the league since February 2nd. But then he sets about, John does, and he talked to various folks around the league, other executives, and granted them anonymity in order to get their unvarnished thoughts. And he identified four things that went wrong in terms of getting from good to great. He starts by saying, by the way, going from good to great is hard. There's lots of teams that have tried to go from good to great and failed. It's not a natural progression. There is no inevitability to once you get to be good that you then therefore get to be great. I mean, look at those Portland teams with Dame Lillard and LaMarcus Aldridge, and you know what I mean? Like,
those teams were very good.
They thought they were, we look what we got. We're going to be great. And they never were, right? They were good.
They were good.
They were good. So there's no right to go from good to great. That's a very tough deal. But so the four things that he said are sort of key, and they were where they came up short was, first, number one, by far, was you have to get the centerpiece right. And here's the statement. Talking to other execs, in their view, Morant's lack of dependability for health, for shooting, for defense, for leadership, for avoiding entirely avoidable suspensions makes it impossible to build a team around him. That's the fundamental. That is the biggest thing. Can you build a team around Ja, but can you move on from Ja? Like, let's say you decide, I can't build around a, then what are you building around? You don't have an alternative that you're building around. And so he goes on to say, few blamed the Grizzlies for riding with Morant this far. The alternative at almost any point before his first suspension would have been a Nico Harrison type situation that would have been wildly unpopular. But goes on to talk about his defensive struggles, his lack of shooting. But then it talks about, this is, I think, a problem. Talks about all the highlight reel stuff and whatever. He said, however, he also contended for the league lead in eye rolls and sulked this year when the revamped Memphis offense sent him to the corner. Here he said, watch him miss a chance for an easy layup in the clip below because he's too busy brooding to look for the ball while his man doubles Jackson. For those reasons, many execs think Morant's trade value is limited despite his star power, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's the fundamental thing. Can you build around Ja Morant, but do you have any alternative but just to hope for a better Ja Morant? Healthier, and maybe this offseason he'll work on his shooting. I mean, it is a hell of a position to be in. It's not unlike. It's a less complicated. Zion is a sort of. It's interesting. These two guys who were friends and grew up in South Carolina and everything else together. That they're like, how do you possibly? Now Zion is a more exaggerated case. He's never been available and never done the things that Ja has done.
Mm-hmm.
But like. How do you build around Zion, but how do you move on from Zion, right? It really is a hell of a dilemma. And again, you can't just wave your wand and turn Ja into, you know, name the superstar you'd like to turn him into. You can't do that. Okay, two, don't overextend on the supporting cast, meaning Desmond Bane. I was a bit surprised how many people I talked to look at Bane's situation as a negative. He has 4 years on $163 million left on his current contract, but the execs I talked to said he wasn't good enough to be an elite team's third best player and was overpaid for what he was. So there you go. The perception of Bane's deal in other front offices does matter for the Grizzlies' optionality. Attempting to move Bane for assets or multiple young players might not generate much return. So there you go. Interestingly enough, on Jaren, he says, one thing everyone I talked with agreed to, Jackson as the number two guy was worth every cent. Maybe they were humoring me because of part office, the front office that drafted him, he said. But there you go. So Jaren as a number two, worth every cent, according to these execs. But Desmond Bane, overpaid for what he does. Your thoughts?
I guess the biggest thing to start with, which is the biggest thing to start with the front office and their decision making is Ja.
No, but on the Bane part.
But on the Bane part. My thing with Desmond Bane is, for one, and Jeffrey and I have talked about this and done a little bit of the digging, is because he got less than the maximum contract available to him. He signed for less.
It's going to be hard to deal.
Right. Because the cap will be going up, the aprons will be changing.
But his
deal
number
will
is
not
low
be.
In terms of what you're going to get in exchange for him, right?
Like
That's.
But I think that's less so just about his contract and more so about the player himself. He's not. I wouldn't say he's defensively challenged. He's good enough defensively. Certainly strong, but he's a scoring guard. There is a limit to how much that is worth.
So number one problem is, can you really build around Ja? Number two problem is Desmond Bane makes too much money. This is at least according to these execs.
Yeah.
Number three is they tried a big swing trade, and it was a complete disaster. According to an exec, the smart trade killed them because cost them draft assets and a $20 million salary slot for a whole lot of nothing, and then you had to deal more draft assets to get rid of him. That trade absolutely killed them.
I mean, we've talked about
that. Yes, I know. There's nothing here that we've talked about all of this.
Yeah.
and we've also talked, I've talked extensively about this one, is finding cheap talent is hard. That back when this team was a better version of itself, it was Dylan Brooks around the core. It was Dylan Brooks and Steven Adams, and it was Tyus Jones, and it was D'Anthony Melton, and it was Kyle Anderson, and it was Brandon Clark. And the only one of those who remains is Brandon Clark. And instead, quoting now, bets on players like Smart, Zaire Williams, Derrick Rose, David Roddy haven't panned out. And so I'll go on here and I'll read some more. The reality is they'll almost certainly never have a bench as strong as that 2022 unit when their three best players and Clark were still on rookie deals, so that they could bring multiple $10 million players off the pine. Going forward, they'll likely have to have three max or near max players soaking up salary at the top of the food chain, which means they need to find more players like Pippen and Wells at the back end. So as the four sins, Ja's not good enough. The four things that went wrong: Ja's not good enough, Desmond Bane's too expensive, they whiffed on their big trade, and they replaced a very good bench with a highly mediocre bench. Does that sum it up for you?
That's pretty succinct. That sounds about right.
It is interesting, Jaren's flaws, which some people like to hyper focus on, his rebounding or whatever else, or is the fact that he hasn't come up big in the playoffs, not mentioned.
No.
Like Jaren is, and I don't really think it is funny. Jaren may be a problem going forward just because how much money he may have to make, but in terms of what has gone wrong, Jaren is not a part of what has gone wrong.
No. I mean, even in the playoffs, and we've also looked at this, I mean, beyond Jaren Jackson Jr., who else on that team this year played a lick of defense?
Right. No,
maybe Zach Edey, because, I mean, cleaning the glass is part of that, but beyond that, he's their best defender by a mile.
Hollinger goes on to point out, however, that it's easy to see that it's easy to see a way forward, and it's interesting. Drew Hill wrote a piece, and I don't know how much I subscribe to this, but he wrote a piece in the Daily Memphian today saying that if you look at the rest of the playoffs in the West, you realize that the Grizzlies aren't that far away. Like, we've imagined some separation, but here you have six knocking off three. You have, like, all kinds of chaos in the West. Who's really, really good? All of a sudden, now do you feel, you know, the Lakers? How do you feel about the Lakers? All of a sudden, the Lakers have separated themselves from the Grizzlies. Have they really? LeBron's, you know.
They don't have a big.
They don't have a big. I presume they're going to get a big.
Sure, but if they were to play, we saw them struggle with Rudy Gobert, of all people. No disrespect to Rudy Gobert. He's a multi-defensive player of the year. Do you not think they would struggle with a Zach Edey, especially in his newfound role? I think they would.
Well, certainly if they have the current lineup, I don't know what center, what big they're going to get. So, I mean,
sure,
they will go get a big. Yes. So, and then in the meantime, you have J.J. Redick yesterday saying, basically calling Luka fat. It is kind of amazing.
I saw how that worked out last night.
He said, well, what he said was, the first thing we have to do as a team is to get into championship shape. Now, I think you're right. The first thing they have to do as a team is to get a big,
yeah,
and to get a bench and like whatever. But it was interesting that if you're Nico, can you be saying, told you so? I don't think so. You still screwed up royally.
Not at all.
I think you can hope that this continues to be a problem because but Luka is not the reason they lost this series.
No.
But it was interesting. Like, that is fuel for the fire. What did you make of J.J. Redick saying the first thing we have to do is to get into championship shape?
I think the bigger thing with J.J. Redick, and we were talking with Jason and John about this yesterday, was just his general kind of demeanor yesterday or through this playoffs.
Well, he stopped off after the question.
And that continued, though, throughout even into, you know, post-game interviews where he just...
Windhorse called him immature, which I thought was interesting. He said he coached as an immature coach and he acted like an immature coach. Obviously, listen, the Lakers never scored more than 20 points in any fourth quarter in that series.
Wow.
So if you don't think that it took a lot out of the starters to never, you know, I mean, literally in the
end.
They
were playing 40 plus minutes a night.
Yes. And literally at one point, one game they played the entire second half. And so I think, you know, this franchise sometimes went too far the other way, but that obviously didn't work for J.J. Redick. Of course, the problem is that anytime they took LeBron and Luka off the court, they were toasted. So it wasn't a difficult situation. Anyway, you can read Drew's piece over the Daily Memphian, John Hollinger with an interesting contribution on the Grizzlies. Again, it wasn't path-breaking stuff, but it was executives basically around the league saying the kind of things that we've been saying and affirming the things that we have.
Validating. We're not crazy.
Validating. Yeah, we certainly are not crazy. All right. We'll talk to Jason Smith coming up next, then Chris Harrington. It is the Jeff Calkins Show on a Friday on International Tuba Day for all who celebrate. Before then, I will tell you this would be a great weekend to get to Oak Hall. We truly do have one of the great clothing stores in America, and you walk right in there today and you'll see they got their performance polos, they've got their niche. It's the place is like it's lit up with spring. Now you walk in, Peter Millar, Johnny O, Cricket, it's the Breck slacks and a whole variety of colors. I have done a lot of public speaking this week, and I talked about going to the Evergreen Grill the other day. Immediately had two people compliment me on my nice blue sport coat from Oak Hall. They've got legendary service, legendary clothes. The place is, if you need alterations done, just for example, like I needed my shirt sleeves taken in just a little bit. They were a little too long. You go on in there. This was 6 months or a year later after I bought the shirt. I went in there. I said, of course. And then they have the people who do the alterations. They're right there on the site. It is a legendary store, and it's springtime. So time to get in there and spruce up your spring and summer wardrobe with a visit this weekend to Oak Hall. Back in a moment, Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show, joined now by Jason Smith. Jason John, every single day from 11 until 2. So, Jason, I was just going through the John Hollinger piece on the Grizzlies' ailments, on why they haven't been able to go from good to great, which is what you want. You know, once you get to be good, you think, oh, this is wonderful. How do we get from here to where we want to go? Pistons will be in that situation now over the next few years, right? They've had a good year. They're promising. How do we get from good to great? And Hollinger, talking to various execs, identified 4 problems. So I want you to tell me, I want you to rank these problems. Which do you think are the biggest problems? Here they were. One was Ja hasn't been a reliable, you can't build around Ja. He's been unavailable, he's been moody, and he hasn't progressed as a shooter or defensive player. That's one. Yeah. 2, Desmond Bane is, you overpaid your sidekick, he's overpaid and for what he does. 3, you took a big swing at a trade and missed, and the Marcus Smart deal killed you because it cost you draft capital and salary flexibility. And then 4, you haven't been able to put if you look at the bench that used to be around these guys and compare it to the bench that's around them now, yeah, you've taken a lot of swings and missed. That's sort of the 4 categories. Jaren is not in any of the problems.
So amazing, isn't it? Convenient considering he was part of the front office.
Yeah, but I think it's – I don't really consider Jaren a problem. Maybe he will on going forward be a problem. But of those 4 problems, which is the biggest problem?
Well, I would just say, yes, he points out that Jaren is the one guy that played in an all-NBA level and maybe he makes the third team. But has he been that in the playoffs?
No.
And to just completely gloss over his flaws, I mean, we've had entire conversations based around Jaren, and I don't think they've been.
So you want that to be included on the list?
I mean, I think the crossroads you're at with him is part of it. The fact that he hasn't, you have to phrase this very, very delicately. But I would just say, He still has immaturity issues going into year 8 and rebounding issues that he should have been out of by now. And the fact that he's up for a max level deal when he is not max level big in the sense of those guys are getting you double doubles. That's a big concern going forward.
I think that's true.
However,
not really looking at what's the biggest concerns going forward.
I get it. Here's the other thing. Real quick though. Here's the other thing on Jaren. Edie, like we talked about, is really an investment in Jaren because putting Edie, the big rebounding center in the middle of this, the guy that doesn't play today's NBA game in terms of a pop-out 5 that can shoot outside, in terms of the kinds of prototype centers, he's tied. They're invested in Jaren with Edie. You know what I'm saying? And so going forward in terms of if you're talking about moving off Jaren, Then Edie itself becomes okay. Well, what is he if it's not a guy like Jaren that's bouncing outside, inside, roaming, and all that? So my point is, they Edie is that a top 10 pick is an investment in Jaren, and probably even more reason why they're not going to move off of Jaren Jackson Jr. So and they're going to pay him. They're going to keep him. And if you're trading anybody, it's probably Desmond Bane. Back to the point on which is Ja is the biggest issue. But you also leave out the fact that he's the box office. Bane and Jaren don't sell tickets.
No, and in fairness, in the piece, he absolutely said that the execs don't blame Memphis for riding with Ja because what alternative did you have? And he's the box office. But he has been – you think the biggest
– I mean, they also point out they think you're not going to get much of a return for Ja, right?
Yes.
If I'm correct on that. And so, listen, it's in many ways – some of the things I said about Jaren in terms of should have grown out of this by now. I mean, it applies.
Times 10.
However, with him, He's the box office. He's the tickets guy. Yeah. He's the guy that, when he is healthy, makes everybody better. He's the guy that, when he was in the game against OKC, you had a chance there. Hell, even some of us were envisioning, what if they could tie this thing 2-2? Because you'd assume they were going to go on and win that one when Ja was on. He was the guy making the difference, not the all-NBA
guy. No, you're right.
As Hollinger points out, that was on the floor in Jaren Jackson Jr. Again, I would point to Jaren's playoff stats, right? Ja in the playoffs has been fantastic when healthy for the most part. I mean, so if I'm applying both of those things to both guys, you wish they'd grown out of it, but one of them's more box office, right? One of them's the kind of central to what I'm doing, and I know that when healthy makes everybody better. Well, then, in terms of my hopes and faith that he's going to grow out of it and sort of this risk, you know, give me Ja over Jaren in that department.
And what's interesting is, of course, is we're going to be now chopping this up for the next,
of course,
however long, right? And
does the All-NBA thing make it easier, though? Because if he does make that, which we'll get later this month, right, then, I mean, doesn't the likelihood of this thing, because, I mean, even Hollinger wrote that, then it seems like, because, I mean, that's, you've been planning on that, too. That's the thing about the Edie pick, is you've been, when you did that, you planned on getting Jaren re-signed sometime in this 2 years. And so this has been, you know, again, the idea that, well, I think it might be the, you know, the time and the place to move on from him. I just think they're too far gone down that road, and they've been planning too long for this. And again, getting Edie, who addresses Jaren's weaknesses, is even more reason to believe that if they're going to trade anybody, it's probably going to have to be Desmond Bain. But Hollinger points out you're not going to get much for him either.
Yeah, on the Jaren thing, I was going to get Chris to help me understand this. This is what he says. He says, let's assume he does make All-NBA,
he does, right,
which is both the better and more likely of the two scenarios. By making All-NBA, and we sort of know this, Memphis can sign him to an extension for 30% of the max, despite his raise being more than the allowable 140%. Normally, you can only give a raise 140% of what they make now. So now he can give an extension for more than 30%. He goes on to say, Memphis would have four open roster spots and $48 million below the apron, which would have access to its full non-taxpayer mid-level exception and could either re-sign Aldama and Kennard or, more impactfully, inject itself into several trade scenarios via future picks and sign-and-trades of expiring money. So,
Those sign and trades, right? Just to make sure, he's talking about Kennard Santi there. In that case, you're those sign and trades are with them. That's the expiring money, correct?
I think that's right. And, yes, and then they also have Marvin Bagley's bird rights,
right,
for a sign and trade as well. So that's if you go ahead and give Jaren the big raise for 30% of the max. He goes on to say, roster upgrades become more challenging to execute if Jackson doesn't make All-NBA, which may be counterintuitive because if he makes All-NBA, he gets 30%. He gets the biggest paycheck. But here you go. The Grizzlies would likely move to protect the asset rather than allow him to hit unrestricted free agency next summer. And the way to do that would be to use cap space on a renegotiate and extend deal that would limit the Grizzlies to the room exception and remove many sign and trade shenanigans since they'd have to renounce Kennard and Bagley. This scenario would also likely involve re-signing Aldama via his $11.9 million cap hold, possibly to a bloated short-term deal that would serve as a walking trade exception for mid-season. A salary dump trade with Conchar's remaining 2 years and $13 million might also be needed. Do you believe that all of this mathematics helps them help? Like, if you do actually need to be a CPA to understand this.
Oh, dude, when I got to that part of his article, I was losing it. I mean, I was like, yeah, I don't understand this. But I didn't. I stayed with it as long as I could.
When I got there, I'm like, hold on.
You know, dump deals and stuff. I mean, language that's obviously, you know, Chris Harrington. And
yeah, we'll get Chris in here to walk us through that.
To translate it for us. But no, listen, I would say this. I'm not going to get mad at anybody there's obviously less flexibility, it feels like, of the two scenarios if Jaren doesn't make All-NBA. That's what it sounded like. If he makes All-NBA, right, I'm not going to get mad at people that said, you know what, pay him. You get to keep Santi, whatever. Maybe you decide to move off of him because clearly you do need to bolster this roster. But I'm not going to be mad at a running back of the core that includes a bolstered roster. I'm not going to say that's not going to work. I'll put it that way. I would, again, I think, you know, the other part about that Ja-Jaren conversation is Ja is signed up right now. Jaren is not. That was real in terms of applying the thing to both guys. But I think for me, it's you have to make a move on the three. However, I'm not going to fault anybody or say it's not going to work or you're dumb or you're wrong if you go, if Jaren makes all NBA, because I think that's, you know, again, with the way he was playing this year, they start to envision this. And you know, you make the moves at the deadline, you know, sort of probably envisioning, okay, there's a good chance he's going to make all NBA the way he's playing. Now, nothing's guaranteed, but it just feels like they've been planning this route for a while. And so that still leaves you some flexibility and a way to bolster the roster. Maybe not enough to make you a true contender, but certainly enough to have you in the mix. And if Ja Morant can stay on the floor more than 50 games, let's get him to 65. So we're talking all NBA again. Then I think there is probably a good chance, maybe even, that you're top four, top five next year. I don't know that you're ever, though, I mean, this is where I have my doubt, a true contender in terms of I do think that your big three is flawed. So eventually I think you have to, yeah, you can decide on Ja and trade him later.
All right.
But
so
right now you got to try to get the most you can out of that.
In other news, your co-host tried to give us hope about PJ Haggerty. Now, you got Goodman saying he's visiting NC State. It doesn't feel like he's coming back. Is he going to, like, well, once he gets to NC State, is he going to be getting on a plane coming back to Memphis?
That's what you can't control. Is, I mean, when we were just looking at his Ole Miss or Memphis, and the fact that Memphis is willing to go up to three, Ole Miss 3.5, whatever, and you weigh those out, you can make a lot of, you know, you see a lot of reasons why a return would make a lot of sense for a little bit less money. That said, what John had said even in the conversation was, what you should factor in, but we can't right now, is a desperate school coming in that's got it because they've missed on another guy. And Annie said that's the school you probably got to watch out for. And if it's, you know, NC State here, and sure, we, you know, we might have even heard his names, but if, you know, what all it took is one desperate school with the money, and all of a sudden you're not, you know, yeah, everything you thought about a possible return's kind of out the window. And so, listen, I will say this, you know, if and the beat writers had made it, the Tigers beat writers, Parth and Munns, from what I'd read from them, and made it pretty, you know, had gotten me to a point in terms of reading them that I thought Dane Danger and the chances he gets a waiver's out the window. Well, I got John on this week saying, hello.
Very hopeful, you know? Yeah.
And so I had the conversation yesterday, I think it was with Jeffrey and Cobb. I mean, the way Dane Danger was playing last year, you have money earmarked for him apparently too. And if you can get him back with what you've sort of put in place, at least to potentially replace and probably replace PJ Haggerty, Dane right now.
No, I feel good about it.
And his return might be more important to success next year. Now, that, you know, that might all be wrong. I mean, PJ Haggerty was second team AP All-American. But we saw how well Dane was playing. He was eating up Yaxel and anything in front. Hell, he was eating up Colorado State in that first half.
Destroying them.
We thought we were about to be on a run.
The whole country was discovering Dane Danger. Yeah.
And they were about to zero in, and Memphis kept advancing, exactly. So I think at this point, if that's true, Jeff, and we're starting to feel better about his chances, then he's the one probably – that's more important.
I'd feel pretty good about things. Yeah.
Because of what Penny has added already with Doug
with the guards,
and these other guys, Sincere and those guys. And so, yeah, maybe you're not all American on the perimeter anymore. But if you've got Big Dane back next year, oh man.
Let's be honest, could be conference player of the year again. If he played the way he did down the stretch, he is 100% the front runner for, if he comes back,
and
he
I like
is
the team.
Yeah. And I like the team too. The way Gabe put it, he asked me, which would have been more important, Dane coming back for this year, or if DeAndre had gotten the waiver for team toxicity, right? If he had gotten the waiver for team toxicity.
Yeah, I like the name.
And I think Dane to this, because I'm not sure even DeAndre could have saved team toxicity, where
right.
I think Dane as the fulcrum for this team, I'd have very high hopes. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah,
Last question. I know you were the prep writer for a long time at the CA before you came the Tiger beat writer. And Buster Kelso got his 1,200th win last night. He's now the co-coach at Lausanne. Has a career record of 1,205, the seventh winningest high school coach in the nation. Did you cover him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, covered Buster Kelso many a game, and had to sat in many a dugout with him, both from here to Murfreesboro, you know, after games, and him patiently waiting on me to catch up to everything that he was saying. Because, you know, I mean, you had to cover everything on the Preps beat, but my loves were obviously basketball and football. And baseball, listen, I mean, I'm a Cubs guy. I've been a baseball kid since I watched them on GN. But covering baseball, which you did,
I was,
you know, major league style, right?
Yeah.
Think about me coming up trying. And so I would have to play catch, and especially early on for me, like in my first, you know, year or two covering Preps of the seven that I did it. And Buster would help. Coach would help me, man. I'm not going to lie to you. And his patience, because this is a GOAT. He's a GOAT in terms of high school baseball. And so the funny thing is now the co-coach on that, Chris Mitchell, I went to school with, sixth grade over at Snowden Junior High. So a guy, you know, you got the GOAT, and you've got a guy, and Chris Mitchell's a great baseball guy, who's right there apparently with Buster and has Lausanne, you know, threatening to make its first state tournament. They've really done a lot with that program. But back to Buster, it's a class act. He's a winner, Jeff. I mean, I can tell you all about, you know, the players he had, the foresights and all. I mean, two great ones. Baseball man through and through, but the class, you know, because I'm a Preps writer. I'm looking, hey, I'm not going to be here forever, right? And Buster probably knew, you know, thought that about a lot of Preps guys. He'd see them come and go, but he'd still treat you with that patience because he knew, you know, in the end, you were there to highlight his kids.
Yeah.
And much like all the greats, it was always about giving them the spotlight, not himself. So big fan of Coach Kelso. He's a definite GOAT in my book.
All right. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it.
Take care, brother.
Buster Kelso could take the box score from that game and take it to the frame corner now that he's gotten his 1,200th win. And of course, he probably went there for the 1,000th win, 500th win, 750th win, like whatever. The seventh winningest coach in the country is kind of amazing and certainly worthy of framing. And if you're going to frame something, custom framing at the frame corner, it's what they do. It's what they've been doing for 50 years. They can take whatever it is and make it memorable and forever, something you will have on your wall and have to hang down. It is the Frame Corner. That's 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. Going to take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.